Welcome to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast. I'm your host, Earl Carruthers, and I have been a serial cannapreneur in the growing, processing, and retail space for over 8 years. And we are here to learn together to get a well-balanced understanding of cannabis and cannabis products. Tune in every week for quality cannabis education for your canna inspiration. I believe I am live. I am here. We have some special guests for us today as we get in technology worked out, and they're coming in. In the meantime, I'm going to do my intro. What up, what up, what up, though? Hello to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast show, the show that is dedicated to help you avoid uncomfortable cannabis experiences, because who likes that? Through education, resources, and connections, memberships, and courses, we help you have comfortable experiences. Yes, 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 yes. And this is the Cannabis Therapy Podcast show, and this is our Cannabis Connect, which is really a series that's dedicated to budding entrepreneurs. Ha, 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 ha. Budding entrepreneurs who are looking to get into the industry or who are in the industry to continue to fine-tune their skills. And today, we're going to talk about how to get licensed in Detroit. In Detroit, Michigan, the Detroit application process. Yes, we are. And we have two wonderful special guests, which I'm going to introduce once I see them in our StreamYard background. Okay, I do see them, but I'm not going to introduce them yet. They're going to have to wait. I'm going to have to wait for a second because it's my time. I know when they come in here, they're going to try to shine and all that jazz, but no, it's my show, okay? My show. Nevertheless, this is a Cannabis Therapy podcast show. This is interactive. If you have questions, we do have some pre-submitted questions. Thank you for those on Facebook, YouTube, all that jazz who submitted some questions for us to answer live on the show. We're going to do that. But this is live interactive. You can ask questions, interact. And if it's on topic, we'll answer it. If it's not, we may answer it later or we may not. However, you can ask questions. Again, this is a Cannabis Therapy podcast show. And today we're going to be talking about how to get a license. How to successfully get a license to get in the Detroit licensing game. Yes, very, very, very hot topic. Now, let me talk about our guests. We have two guests. We have LaToya Rucker and we have Rebecca Collette. They are the COO and CEO. Fancy titles, but they're cool. Of Collexium Detroit. Yes, they are. Co-founders is what I call them. These women are legit. They are legit. Very rarely I come across people, you know, I ain't going to say, you know, picky or whatnot, but there's not, in this world, there's Rams and there's Bams, okay? Rams stands for real ass mofos, all right? Those are Rams. And then there's Bams, bitch ass mofos. There's a lot of Bams in this world, and I will say it's very few Rams. These two are Rams, like true legit Rams, and we're going to be talking about Detroit from the experience of being Detroit applicants ourselves. Yes, we are. Nevertheless, all right, I got some key points. I want to give you guys some background about these two. Both two are the first females to co-own a medical marijuana licensing clinic. Some big accomplishments. Collexium is a female minority-owned operation located in Detroit, Michigan. Hence, why we're talking about how to successfully get a license in Detroit. I thank you. This is totally interactive. Thank you for smiling. You know, we put your comments up here as well. You know, if I do say a little joke, you know, sometimes I got, you know, daddy humor and I don't even have any kids. But nevertheless, it's all good. I appreciate you guys smiling at that. Some other things. LaToya in 2014 was selected by Goldman Sachs, 10,000 small business, and currently is a very active as an alumni. I didn't even know that. There's a lot of things that she does not share with me to help us each other out. So I'm going to keep calling her out about this stuff. Nevertheless, Rebecca worked alongside the Bureau of Cannabis Control in California, yay, with Tupac, joking, not Tupac, the Michigan Regulatory Agency during the development of their social equity program. Yes, it's that kind of fast, but she's legit. She has a history in cannabis and a bunch of other businesses as well. So without further ado, let me introduce, are they here? Boom, let me unmute you. What is up? Oh, you're mutes. You got to unmute your mics. Can't unmute your guests because they choose to mute them. There we go. Hello.
Hello.
What's
hey.
Up?
Hey. Can you see both of us?
Let's see. Audience, do you guys see both of them right now? I see Rebecca dominantly taking over the screen, which is kind of what she normally probably does.
Okay, hold on real quick.
Cool. That's what's up. Welcome, ladies. Thank you for joining. Thank you for joining.
Awesome. Happy to be here.
One and a shoulder. All right. Bart, it's probably better now. Somebody said I can see one and a shoulder. There we go. You got nice shoulders, by the way, just to bring that out there. Cool.
I don't know. We see both of us on here, so I don't know. And both of the screens. So.
It's all good. We're about to do presentation mode in a second, but I would like to kind of get more into what you guys are doing towards the end of the show. I kind of like to take a deep dive right to our topic to start off with. Is that cool?
Sounds good.
That's cool? All right. Thank you. You know, I appreciate you guys letting me run the show. So here we go. I got some slides, a little powerful, you know, a little cute presentation here. Some of the things I like to discuss, Rebecca and LaToya, is I like to get over medical versus recreational licensing in Detroit. Kind of want to get into that. And I have some slides that I'm going to bring up and kind of bounce some questions off of you and some of the audience. You guys can answer or ask questions. If you have an answer too, that's all good. So difference between medical versus recreational. I also want to get into the legacy program, kind of talk about its benefits, pros, and if there's any cons to it. And then kind of get into some zoning information, kind of where the rubber hits the road, per se, and kind of what we need to know as far as zoning in Detroit. And then get into the whole application process for applying in Detroit, which also ties into getting to the state of Michigan. And then lastly, this is really, really good timing because we get to really talk about and shed some light on this recent litigation that's going on with the legacy program that's being held up in court. So we're going to kind of talk about what it is, the benefits of it, how it works, and then also the state of the program as of right now, which I couldn't think of a better time to talk about than now. Is that cool? You're on mute. You guys are on mute. You're just nodding right now. All right. You're on mute.
Yes, that's cool. I thought we said it was cool already. We are ready for the deck. We want to see the presentation. We are excited to hear your presentation.
This isn't Zoom, okay? You don't need to be unmuting self and I'm sitting here like trying to talk and you're on mute. All right, just going. All right, let's go. All right, let's get some background information. So after years, you know, Detroit finally kind of gets into the game of doing recreational cannabis, which was different than medical cannabis. And I got this timeline I want to get into. I'm going to speed this right here just because, you know, we're doing it. So in 2008, we had medical marijuana. And then in 2012, in Detroit, we pretty much decriminalized cannabis where you can possess and consume. There was nothing in the law that said how you're going to get it. So whether in 2008, whether you had a medical card or not, in 2012 in Detroit, whether you just adult, pretty much adult use, you could possess and you can consume. And that was kind of like a Detroit quasi legalization. Didn't really say how you could get it. But 2008, 2012, and then in 2015, we had these medical marijuana caregiver centers. And let's kind of speak to that at this time. So in 2008, the program, which was set up for caregivers who could grow for patients, meaning I'm a caregiver and I can grow for up to 5 patients plus myself, 12 plants per patient. 12 times 5 is how much?
72.
12 times 5 is 60, but I get what you're saying because you're.
See, I didn't say it. You see, I didn't say that. I'm thinking about yourself too.
Oh yeah, right. 12 times 5. I get it. You know, Diamond Sex, whoever. You know, you still got the Diamond Sex Award. It's all good. So 12 times 5 is 60. True. Plus your 12, which is what you're thinking of, the max that we can grow. Yeah. In 2008 is 72. So at this time, And you could test if you were in this scenario. In around 2009, 2010, I personally started up a delivery service because I became a caregiver. I grew for 5 patients plus myself, 72 plants, and I grew more than my patients could consume. And there was a clause in the law that allowed for a caregiver to assist a patient. You were limited to how much you can grow. You're limited to how much you can possess. But who you could assist was actually kind of clear in the law that it was kind of like this networking scenario. If you had a card, I had a card. We can trade, or I could receive compensation for the work I did as a caregiver. And that's kind of in 2008, how people, 2009, 2010, 2011, how people operated. And then in between 2008, 2015, a lot of raids started happening. Do you guys know why those raids started to kind of pop off?
Yeah, because there were all these interpretations of the MMFLA. And so with that, you had law enforcement, and they interpreted one way. You had local municipalities that interpreted a certain way, and then you had the patients and the caregivers. So it was a lot of gray. And when it was passed and when the legislation was put forth in 2008, it was done so with that ambiguity so that people would say yes to it. And so it was really just to open the door to get us to where we are now, honestly. It took a lot of time. A lot of people had to sacrifice a lot of things during that process. But I think essentially it was the beginning of what we now see as an industry in 2021. So
that's a good point. Now, during this time, with that ambiguity, that's a nice word there. I tried to say it correctly. A-B-U, all right, whatever. With that going on, it allowed a lot of people with little capital to really operate a cannabis. And really, you could have had a delivery service, which you already had a car probably. You had some cannabis in a jar. You put your information on Weed Maps or THC Finder. You get some phone calls and you make delivery. You have a little business going on. Or if you had a brick and mortar where you just got a certificate of occupancy as a retail store or a marijuana clinic, and you just had a card table and some mason jars. Technically, you had a little dispensary with, $5,000, $10,000. And your licensing fees were, maybe your doctor costs $100, $150 per patient. And then to the state, you paid $100. So, you're under $1,000 in licensing fees in between 2008 and 2015. I just want to give this background to kind of get to where we're at now. So, where I'm going with that. So then, key thing you said, it made, there was interpretation based upon different municipalities. Meaning, you ever drive down a freeway where it's raining on one side, it's not the other, and you kind of go. That's kind of like how 8 Mile was. Like Oakland County, Bill Schuette and the gang, Bill Schuette was the attorney general at the time in 2008. And he didn't like the Medical Marijuana Act. And other attorney or other prosecutors in certain areas who also did not, Jessica Cooper in Oakland County, I was not a fan of. So whoever teamed up with the attorney general in that municipality, war kind of started to happen where they decided to rape people, not based upon really law, but more based upon their, like you said, interpretation of the law. They thought, well, instead of a caregiver assisting a patient, it was more, well, I think a caregiver can only assist the patient. So the word "a" and "the" really had some really fine lines if you're going to go to jail or not, depending on where you were. So Oakland County, yeah, there was raids started happening, and then people started to flee where? They started to flee to Detroit along 8 Mile, right? And you had, at this time they call it the Wild Wild West per se. How many shops do you think were kind of operating, say, between 2008 and 2015 in Detroit?
So I think the count was like about 300 dispensaries at its height. It's like 300 plus. So yeah, it was crazy.
It's 300 plus, and that's more because Detroit was kind of not saying you cannot do anything about it. But the citizens started to complain, and that's when in 2015, because truly, I mean, there was there were shops opening up. I mean, literally like right next door to the church. I get it. Right next door to people's houses. There were shops opening up, you know, wherever. Some buildings didn't even have permits. You can have a shop inside of a person's house at a residence. So I get the complaints. So Detroit started to come up with a Medical Marijuana Caregiver Center Act that pretty much took a lot of that 300 down, I would say around 75 to 90 shops. Would you agree with that? Or you think with the Caregiver Act?
Yeah, well, they put a cap at 75.
Okay.
Yeah.
They put a cap at 75. Mm-hmm. So then those 75 who did meet that cap ended up going through the city licensing process. This isn't a state program. This was a city licensing program. And then at the same time, 2015, well, a year later in 2016, we had the Medical Marijuana Facilities Licensing Act. Now, from your understanding, what did it take as a caregiver to qualify a caregiver center versus a medical marijuana facility? What were the differences between, all right, I'm in Detroit, I have a shop on 8 Mile, I happen to fall into the zoning, now I'm getting this caregiver license in Detroit, and then the city, or then the state comes in and they say, well, forget your city programs, I got a new program called the Medical Marijuana Facility Licensing Act, and you got to go through here. What was the contrast or the differences from your thoughts between the two programs?
Yeah, so I just think it's really the barrier to entry for the city program was a lot simpler, a lot easier. And I really wish people had not in the city of Detroit opted in to the state's program, because in my mind, we could have had our own program within the city of Detroit. Opting in created a high barrier to entry, you know, astronomical cost. Attorney, accounting. At the time, they wanted 3 years of financials. You had to get your financials verified by an accountant. So it was a lot of red tape. And then they had a board. So I don't know if you want to fast forward to that process, but there was a board in place. And this board was highly political and was appointed by the previous governor, Snyder. So that was, for lack of a better term, a shit show.
That is a very good term. I don't think you're lacking anywhere with that. That they turned sugar to shit for sure. So key thing, I think, so the medical marijuana, so really, as long as you were able to go through the city zoning process and got your building zoned and cleared, there was really no capital. Let's talk about some of the terms of qualify for medical marijuana. So you have to have this capitalization. So for a retail store, needed to show about 300,000. Is that right?
Yes.
You had to show 300,000 clean. This isn't, you know, brother on the fifth flow, 300,000 in the backpack type thing. It's 300,000 legitimately every single transaction for maybe two to three years. You needed to kind of see.
Yeah, 3 years. Yep.
So there was that capitalization hurdle. So it's like Tough Mudder now. You got all these damn obstacles. You got that big hurdle, and then you had the criminal background check. Are you aware of what the criteria of what the criminal background check was to qualify as an applicant for medical marijuana?
Yeah, so I mean, you really had to disclose everything, right? If you got a traffic ticket in 1962 and, you know, the middle of nowhere, you needed to put that on that application. If you had anything that was in your background that was questionable, you had to put it in there. And so we know a few operators that had applied during that time had omitted things like that, because I mean, you forget, you can't remember every ticket, every little small infraction that you get. And that held up their process. They might've been, you know, good to go on every other aspect, including the financial piece, but were held up because of some miscellaneous traffic tickets. So yeah.
Okay. So we had the, and I believe some of the requirements, some of them would not necessarily disqualify you, but it could hold it against your character, which was
moral character. Yep. Being of good moral character,
which is another, what's the term? Ambiguous scenario here. Like who decides that? All right. So you had the high capitalization. Then you had the criminal background check. Then we have this board that takes all that information and decides if you could apply. Now, I'm only saying this to say, like, for example, this is also from experience. So I, 2008, started, got into the game, survived the storm of the city process of getting a caregiver city license. And then the state came in with a medical scenario. And I personally ended up, had a building that actually qualified and decided to get creative, not shady, but had to make someone else the owner. And I was going to be a highly paid employee on the lease up until the point where I could qualify. And there's going to be agreement for that and disclose all that with the state. And we did go to, we were the third application reviewed in front of this board, and we were denied based upon character. Based upon what you just said, actually, it wasn't something that didn't disqualify him, but he did not disclose it. And at that point, I exhausted to get to the 2015 license, took about six figures. And then to even get to the medical marijuana facility table, took another six figures. At that time, I'm pretty much exhausted and then having to walk away. This is all going to lead into where we are today with the Detroit Legacy Program and kind of why it actually means and why it's so important to give certain people opportunities. So in 2016, a lot of people couldn't qualify. And then in 2018, there was a medical marijuana facilities ordinance that was only in Detroit. So in 2016, Medical Marijuana Facilities Licensing Act came in. A year before that, the city started doing caregiver models, which we kind of liked. And then in 3 years later, they created an ordinance that allowed for medical marijuana facilities, which of those facilities in the city of Detroit, how many of them are black owned?
Three,
four,
or four?
Yeah. Of the 46 medically licensed dispensaries, four are minority owned.
Okay.
Minority. So you can't say black.
Apologize.
I mean, I'm just saying because minority is another ambiguous term. Some people think, I'm not even gonna say that on the show, but some people think certain groups are minorities and they're not, you know, for many reasons. So, yeah.
Okay, that's real talk. So you had the caregiver center, which I would say right now, if four out of 46 were minority owned, the caregiver center at the time had to be in a higher percent. I mean, I know for sure when it was the quote unquote Wild Wild West, I mean, I would say maybe 60-70% were, you know, brothers and sisters or minorities, just because the barrier to entry wasn't so high. But once that barrier to entry came in, it weeded out, no pun intended, a lot of minorities, especially in the city of Detroit, after they created this ordinance in 2018. Now, also in 2018, when they created the ordinance, Michigan Regulation and Taxation of Marijuana Act came into play, and this allowed for adult use. Is that right?
Correct.
So we had medical use in 2016. 2 years later, now we're having adult use, and then now there's different requirements to qualify for adult use than medical. Can you speak to one of those requirements that's needed for the adult use program contrast with the medical program?
I mean, one of the things is for adult use not having to show as much capitalization. I mean, there's some positive things in the adult use process versus the medical. In my personal opinion, I think the medical licensing process is way more challenging. I mean, you can argue that medical, medicine, you know, whatever the argument, but a lot of the requirements to even qualify are way more strict in comparison to adult use, you know, not having to show certain capitalization requirements, not having to have all your taxes fully paid off, you know, in regards to your old tax obligations. And then also, if you want to talk specifically to Detroit, real estate isn't a requirement. You know, I mean, I know we're going to get to it, but you can get a provisional certificate. It's not a license. I need to remind everybody of that, but you can have that for a year until you find correctly zoned real estate. So that's also something that's different in medical. Like, you couldn't even go to the medical table without a building, but you can in the adult use scenario.
Good. It's a good point. Another point on top of that, I think you mentioned too, was removing the taxes and the capitalization. That $300,000 capitalization that's required as a medical applicant is null and void now as an adult use, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but there was a period where you had to have medical approval in order to move forward, but then they slowly changed that. So on one hand, I could say that just through time and through their efforts of engaging stakeholders in the industry and really, you know, understanding what those challenges are, things are getting better on the state level. And I think you can attribute that a lot to just having a new governor and abolishing that board,
right,
and, you know, having someone in place like Grisbo that actually does listen.
Good point. So in 2018, so the city has a medical marijuana ordinance. So you see shops still operating for medical, meaning you got to have a card to go in there, and to own and operate that, you had to jump through the medical marijuana obstacles. Now adult use comes in. Now adult use says that city has to really opt out. I believe that's clear now. You were kind of automatically if you didn't have any ordinance, technically you could still open up shop. What kind of happened, I believe, in Hamtramck,
yep,
where they didn't have an ordinance, but then they ended up opening up and they were like, whoa, what the hell is this? And then they ended up creating an ordinance. Okay. So the cities had to opt out, but Detroit decided to opt out of recreational and still keep medical, right?
Correct.
And
well, they didn't opt out, right? They just put a pause on it.
No, but that's opting out.
Okay.
Until a later date, you know, they had the moratorium.
Moratorium, right.
Right. Moratorium. Yes. Another good word. Ambiguous, right. Moratorium. We're just going to keep a spelling bee up in here.
I don't know how to spell it.
Okay. It's all good. All right. So we have this moratorium in the city of Detroit. Now, let's kind of get into the reasons why we have this moratorium and why, which is going to lead us into the legacy program right now. What was, from your insights, now you guys have been behind the scenes trying to help draft an ordinance and an application process to help reconcile the issue of only less than 3% of all the operations in Detroit are minority owned in a minority dominant city. So you have people who don't look like us, live here, own businesses in Detroit. And from my understanding, the city of Detroit wanted to create an opportunity to allow Detroiters and minorities to have a piece of that pie in Detroit. But let me get your two cents as to why the city had that moratorium to not just quickly jump into adult use, but hold it while medical was still going on.
In my personal opinion, it was to increase the percentage of minority-owned facilities. So in that moratorium period, one of the things that happened was establishing of community work groups to come together and build suggestions on what the community thinks should be in the ordinance. And then another thing that happened behind the scene was the city lobby with the MRA to remove that stipulation of if you want to go into adult use, you need to already be medically licensed. So that had to take time of lobbying with Brisbo and team, because the whole reason that they did that is, you know, the statistics in Detroit already majority white owned and not Detroiters owned. And so if they kept the, you know, the opt-in as it should, then I mean, it would have been very, very challenging to get an adult use facility, because you would have to have gone through medical first.
Right.
So anyways, that took time of lobbying with the state to get that law changed, you know. And so they say it was to increase minority ownership, so that in that moratorium period was the time they needed to engage the community, draft up what a legacy mean and what we gonna do for them. So okay. Yeah, I think the intentions were great. Now the execution, we can argue, but the intentions, I definitely think we're good.
Okay. No, that's a very good point. Very good point. And then also the state did have a social equity program, which is going to kind of lead us into, you know, that social equity program gave us discounts, those who lived. So, I mean, the state, people recognize, all right, that's, why is there a social equity program? Why is there a social equity program? I feel like the state and people in general recognize this war on weed is fucked up. It was never meant to prevent people from stopping smoking weed. It was meant to my opinion, to oppress certain people. It meant to control certain people. And it was selfish reasons for corporate greed. But it was rooted all in evilness and selfishness. Nothing to do with the greater good of humanity. This was not about, oh my God, this weed plant truly makes you smoke it and you're gonna go play jazz music or you're gonna go jump off of a building. It was a bunch of lies meant to manipulate people. And the reason why we have social equity is people, you literally are admitting, I agree, that was fucked up. Now what they give back to the people who have been disproportionately affected, meaning that I believe the stat is, minorities, you can say blacks, poor whites, Asians or Hispanics are, well, I know for sure blacks are 4 to 5 times more likely to get arrested, prosecuted, and jailed for the same behavior that whites do at the same rate.
100%.
At the same rate. I'm smoking weed, whatever I'm doing, I'm more likely to get arrested, prosecuted than that. Even though my friend over here is smoking weed too, they're going to look past that, come to me. Because the war on weed, again, was not about, oh my God, the safety of humanity. It was about, no, we're going to control and oppress certain groups of people based upon race or your voting, maybe the anti-left, anti-right, whatever. All right. Now, so social equity, what does social equity do? The state's equity program. Can you give us a little breakdown of that?
Well, yeah, social equity really allows you to, like you mentioned, discount the licensing fees that you incur on the adult use side. So social equity, just to be clear, social equity does not apply to medical. It only applies to recreational. So if you were in a community that was affected by this war on cannabis, then you get a discount for that. If you have a criminal conviction, you get a discount for that. And then if you were a licensed caregiver, you get a discount for that. So I think the maximum discount is probably like, I don't know, 65% off when you add them all up.
Yeah, actually, I think it's 75, but it's all good.
Really? Okay.
It's all good. No, 12 times 5, 72.
Okay. Math is not her thing.
It's not good. No,
my thing. It is.
It is. Okay.
It's all right.
Real quick, Brianna Plummer, I see your question. Who are the minority-owned facilities and you want to support them? Top of my head, I believe House of Zen, Viola, and is there a couple others that you know?
What about Kim Place? You know another place?
Yeah, Chronic City, that's also minority-owned. I think they're on the east side.
Yeah, West Coast Meds, they're not quite open yet, but West Coast Meds, soon they'll be open. Okay. I don't know, maybe we can get a list together. Yeah, you know?
It's not that many. That was the list. I mean,
we can cut. It's kind of, it's funny but sad. It is. All right, so let's get into now. All right, we spent a good time on that slide right here. Let's talk about what is a legacy program. And I know, Rebecca, you're kind of the queen of this legacy scenario. And we're going to kind of get into what you guys offer in the Detroit Cannabis Project. You are co-queen too, LaToya. Don't you get mad.
I'm so glad you said that, bro.
Oh, all right. So can we kind of go over like what the legacy program, because we talked about, all right, medical, we talked about the adult use at the state level. We talked about this social equity program that gives you discounts on fees. That's if you can get to the table. That's if you can get your application in, you qualify, you get a discount on the application fee, you get a discount on a licensing fee. But in between that, you know, well, before that, it costs money. In between that, it costs money. And at the end, it's going to cost more money. So capital is still an issue, even with the social equity program provided by the state. Now, the city of Detroit understood that, and we have this legacy program. Can we kind of give, you know, a quick, I have some more slides going to talk about the program benefits, but right now, kind of what it is and what's the purpose. Let me ask this, the purpose, Rebecca, of the legacy program. Can you give me what the purpose is?
Yeah. To allow more legacy Detroiters to enter into the adult use cannabis market in Detroit.
Okay. All right. Well, that sums up that slide. All right. That is the purpose of the program.
it's the purpose, you know.
Let's talk about some of the five key principles. Now, what is the minimum percentage of ownership of recreational stores that's part of this Detroit legacy program?
50%, which I don't really understand because it's 75, right? So how you gonna have half of the 75? It's not an even number. So I don't know if anybody ever thought about that, but I mean, you know, so half of the 75 of the dispensaries are supposed to go to legacy Detroiters. I don't know how that's gonna be possible. Also, micro businesses are capped at 35 and consumption lounges are all the cap license types, half of those are supposed to go to legacy Detroiters as the ordinance stands now. However, I mean, I know we're probably gonna get into the lawsuit, but you know, it really kind of depends on the ruling from the judge next week. They may, you know, challenge the city of Detroit to change some language in the ordinance. Who knows? But as it is now, that's what it is.
And to try to, as of now, to try to reach that 50%, what you said is, we're going to get into all the caps for all the licensing too. But for retail stores, is that 75? I believe, well, we're going to get to the caps, but let's just say that. So what's preventing them? And it's a good point. Was half of 75 or 30, 38 or 30,
37.5. Right. I'm like, who's part of that?
Somebody's going to split half of a shop. It's all good.
The reason is because they put that cap on the amount of dispensaries before the legacy program was implemented.
Well, I know.
And before it was even thought of. That cap was put on probably back during that period, Earl, that you mentioned earlier, okay, where you had all these dispensaries and they shut them down.
Okay.
So that legacy concept didn't even exist.
I'm just saying, even in the beginning, somebody in the room should know how to count. But that's all.
I understand what you're saying.
All I'm saying.
You know what? Rebecca, were you in the room?
No, I wasn't. Raised my hand, I would have been like, y'all know.
I was going to say. I mean,
it's, to be honest, I am joking about it, but I also am serious because it's going to end up being a legal issue when it comes down to those last two licenses that need to be issued. Who's going to get them? I mean, you know, the numbers are really, that's just going to, I foresee it causing some challenges for sure.
So. Yeah, but it's not really 75, guys. It's really only 30-something because it's already 40 dispensaries that are open, right? So it's not really 75 that we're dealing with when it comes to these legacy Detroiters. You might as well shrink that number down.
I know. That's why it's 37.5, which is the issue. You can't have half.
I'm saying it's going to be less than
Anyways.
That. It's going to be less than that.
Now, how they can control that, which is the next point here, is that no license is given if that percentage kind of changes, right? So like for every one license that's given to someone who's not a Detroit legacy applicant, a license does have to be given to someone who is a Detroit legacy applicant. If not, no other license is kind of given out. Is that, did I say that right?
Yeah, so one-to-one.
Yeah, for the cap licenses. Yeah, that's what they say.
Okay. And then the other principle, if you did qualify for Detroit Legacy, we're going to get into how to apply for that. But if you did qualify, there's this 5 to 6 week early window, which is where we're at now. This was supposed to start April 1st, where only Detroit Legacy applications, well, they're accepting all applications, but it's an early week window to where if you submit your application in April, then in May, your application is kind of reviewed first. Is that right?
Yes. Well, I mean, as it stands now, but, you know, this lawsuit is challenging the whole tiered approach.
Okay.
You know, so. But, yeah, right. The review was supposed to start. Yeah. Anyway.
That's three principles. The other one was about land. So we talked about earlier, you can go through and not have property, but when you do need property, the Detroit City owns property and they're giving a discount to legacy Detroiters. What is that discount for city-owned land for legacy Detroiters, that land that does qualify for zoning?
They say that they're giving a discount. I think it was upwards of 90% of the market value. I mean, but the city already owns it. The whole issue with the land is, last I checked, there were 406 certified legacy Detroiters. Also, last time I checked, there was a list of 17 properties. 17. So, I mean, I know people don't like math, but I'm good at it. And it just don't make no sense. How you gonna, you know, you certify several hundred and you only have less than 20 of those properties. And also, I think a few of those 17 have some zoning issues. So it actually may be less than 17. So what the original plan was for the 1st of July, the city was going to allow certified legacy Detroiters to go through kind of like an application lottery process for those properties. So that was, you know, they hadn't released it yet. They didn't tell nobody the details or nothing, but it was supposed to be revealed, you know, in July, which would probably be pushed back.
Okay. And with the hopes, there's 17-ish, and maybe the city will acquire more property, tax liens, whatever it is, and then kind of give it. But I agree, it's not a lot of property to kind of go around. But the last key principle, too, was that there's supposed to be some type of sources of funding, because we understand that capital still is an issue. Even if you're a Detroit legacy and you got some of this land, it's going to take, you know, a few hundred, if not millions of dollars to develop some of this land. So in order to do that, you could have Brother Man from the Fifth Floor, and you guys could get Johnny Craig around the corner and, you know, put together some some kind of building, but you probably won't pass code. So you need money for that. And can you speak to any kind of funding that you are aware of for Detroit Legacy, or is that still pending?
It's pending. What I can say is that the Michigan Cannabis Industry Association has a Detroit Legacy Fund that they're raising for now. I have no idea if they have raised any money. I have no idea what the fund goal is, and I have no idea how you can apply to get some of that money. But what I do know is that they basically are the fiduciary for the city of Detroit in regards to the funding piece.
Okay, cool. Now, with that said, all those principles, the biggest benefits that you see right now for a legacy, can we kind of talk about those big three? And I kind of see 75% off of selected owned property is a big benefit. Another thing we didn't get to talk about is the discounts on license or application fees. We know the social equity, you get a discount on state licensing fees, but then the city has application fees. What is a discount for Detroit legacy applicants on licensing fees for the application and also for the city license?
Yeah, so for the city, the regular city application fee is $5,000. If you're a certified legacy Detroiter, you get 99% off. So here we go with math again, y'all.
All right, we're not gonna ask. And then I think it was like $100 for the application.
Yeah, for that. Well, that was for the legacy certification. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So $100 for the legacy certification. And then that is for the application to the state, you get 99%, or for the city, 99% off of that. Let's say it's $50. And then for each license, you get, well, I believe it's $1,000 for the application. And I believe it's $5,000 for the actual license. From, however, nevertheless, we got 99% off of that. So say it's $10 for the application, $10 a pop. And then for a retail license, say it's $5,000. You get 99% off of that, which leads you to like $50 per se for that. All right, cool. So those are benefits. So those are, you know, different things. Now to qualify, let's talk about how to, you know, people are going to ask, where do I start? How do I qualify? We have different years to, there's a tier as to how you qualify as a Detroit Legacy applicant. Can you speak to those years, 15, 13, and 10?
Yeah, I mean, last year when they were together in work groups, they had a legacy work group that kind of built this criteria in regards to what does it mean to be a legacy Detroiter, because per some legal jargon, they can't say black or white or, you know, anything like that. So yeah, so if you have no marijuana conviction or anything like that, you just have to show 15 years of Detroit residency. How do you say this word?
Residency.
Ambiguous.
I can't say that word. I really can't.
Residency. Residency. I got you. Residency. I got that one. Pick me up on your team. I got charades. Yeah. We got this.
Yeah, and they don't have to be consecutive, which is, you know, cool. And then you, for all of the tiers, 15, 13, 10, you have had to have been a resident in the city for the last current year, so 2020. Okay. And then you had 13 if you were low income, and 10 if you had a marijuana conviction or a parent had a marijuana conviction.
Cool. And when you do apply, we have the link there. You can go to CannabisTherapyNetwork.com and go into the hub, and all the slide deck and resources are there. But there's a Homegrown Detroit is the website. You go there, you apply, and you have to provide documentation to prove these years. And the most frequent documentation that's used, I believe, is leases, utility bills. What else is there?
Tax returns.
You know.
Insurance.
Okay. And then if there's not things that qualify as things that are not going to be accepted right off the gate by right, then you can fill out a affidavit that allows you to submit other stuff, like maybe school transcripts, a essay from your mother.
You gotta get it notarized.
Yeah, right? You gotta get the affidavit notarized. But yep, basically, yeah, if you got a unique scenario where you were maybe underage, or maybe, you know, you don't have the correct documentation, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's what the affidavit is for. But in my personal opinion, if you have a unique scenario, you know, just try to be as thorough as possible in your documentation and also in that spreadsheet, because, you know, the representatives down at the city, they need to accurately be able to depict the story you're trying to tell them. So if the story is, hey, I was under the age of 18 and this is my mom, like, you need to really accurately paint the story, because I've just heard of a lot of back and forth with the certifications with silly stuff, you know, silly errors. So.
Okay. Real talk. And now there was a period where they stopped taking applications, or I guess not stopped, but there was a deadline. And that deadline was more towards this early window period. But are they still accepting applications today for legacy?
No, they're not going to accept anything until after the lawsuit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, after this lawsuit, it's still, even though you didn't make that early window, the legacy program is not just like this one time special thing. This is supposed to be something that's ongoing, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I think the main reason, even prior to the lawsuit, and, you know, was we're stopping it because we have a backlog and we want to catch up. So, but the idea is after we catch up and after the lawsuit, if you submit a legacy certification, you can just get it reviewed. You know, it's not going to be a deadline or anything like that. It's right. just going to be a recurring long-term program.
Okay. You may go do some back and forth. Like you said, the more thorough you are, the quicker your approval is, but there may be, you know, some deficiencies. And then there's a phone number, there's an email. I mean, it's Detroit, y'all. You're going to have to be persistent with it. You have to earn it. I'm not going to say it's the easiest process, but, you know, the city only has so much staff. So, you know, I get that with a little bit of grace, but be patient. Definitely, I would recommend not to, you know, go, you know, balls deep on the city trying to, where's my application? I don't think that's going to work out. So just be gentle and be patient and let the program work for itself. But if you did qualify, you have legit 10, 13, 15 years, it will get done. It's just a matter of time. So definitely be patient with the city. All right. So let's talk about the different licensing types. So we talk about dispensaries for medical, with consumption lounges, micro businesses, grower safety, compliance. So let's talk about the cap. So like you said, there's 75 medical dispensaries. That's a cap. I believe out of that, maybe 46 are operating. Or so, 45 or so. Then on separate from that, like those 75 could still operate underneath medical, but if those 75 want to get a license, only 37 and a half
right
of them can get a adult use license, and the other 37 and a half has to be adult use, which doesn't mean you only legacy. Legacy just has, you say, a leg up per se. You cannot qualify for legacy and still apply as a general applicant. Okay.
Yes. Definitely.
But nevertheless, half of these licenses, 37 and a half, have to go to legacy Detroiters. The other 37 and a half can go to people who already have medical stores, or you could be just a general applicant that is not a legacy Detroiter. Okay. Same thing with consumption lounges. This is another division here. If half of 35, we're looking at 17 and a half. Yeah, maybe we should have some even numbers. Rebecca, were you doing 12 times five with them? All right, all right. It's all good. Toya, all right. Micro business is 35. So these are all capped. These are all capped. And then you have unlimited. There is no cap for the other. So we're in Detroit, you could do all 10 licenses. You have retail, consumption, micro business. Those three are capped, but the other seven are not. The growers, the different classes of growers, there's no cap. Processors, you make edibles, you want to make concentrates, certain kind of joints, whatnot, drinks. Safety compliance, lab testing, all that jazz, that's that. Secure transporters, there's no cap on that. And then event licenses, there is no cap on how many people can throw events, whether it's bar mitzvah events, like you want to specialize in that, or you want to specialize in weed weddings, whatever it is, there's no cap on that as well. So half of those don't have to necessarily be legacy. I wonder for the cap, for the uncapped ones, is it still like a 50-50 thing?
No.
Okay, cool. Mm-mm. So those are the different licensing type. And is there any limit to how many licenses that a person can apply for?
No.
There's not a limit, but there are certain licenses you cannot apply for if you're applying for, say, if you're applying for a grower.
You can apply for all of them, but you can't. I know, I'm sorry to cut you off, but you can apply for all of them, but then there's the restrictions, you know, that's what
it is. Right. Like if you're a grower, a processor, you cannot have a safety compliance or secure transport. Right. So you kind of have to pick and choose what route you want to take.
Same like with retail, you can either have retail or micro business.
Right.
You could apply for both, but you're going to have to make a decision as to which one you're going to kind of go for. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't hurt to put your hat in as many arenas as possible.
Right. So, yeah, exactly.
All right,
if you can afford it, it's really about the money, you know.
Cool. We got a question from Brianna. How long do you think event licenses last after applying? I know with the state you have to renew every year. every year. It's an annual scenario. I would guesstimate that the city is following the annual renewal.
Yeah.
There's no point to have a forever event license, but you can't have a state license with it. So.
Right, exactly.
Cool. All right, so we talked about the license types. Now we're going to be getting into zoning. All right, zoning. Woo! All right. The city of Detroit still has a drug-free zone, correct?
Yeah.
And,
you know, by schools, parks, churches. I mean, on and on. I mean, so many.
Library, I think, is considered a drug-free zone. Not too many of those, but yeah.
I go to the library all the time. What are you talking about? I go
you
to
do? Library. It's still open. They're in their library buildings.
Yeah, so not every license is permitted in every single zone. So you do have to kind of pay attention to that. We do have a link to where things are permitted and not permitted. But let's just say for the sake of this conversation, industrial areas pretty much allows everything. You could do grow, you could do retail, you could do all that in industrial. But like in B4 zones, and again, this is a zoning map. There's places where you can actually put in an address to get the parcel number, and then put in the parcel number in the city's zoning map, and it will automatically tell you actually if it fits in the zoning for retail store, micro business, consumption lounge, growing, processing, transportation, etc. And also would tell you why it does not, such as if it's 1,000 feet from a school or 1,000 feet from a park or for a church. So before you even acquire property, you can actually go here and clearly define what that zoning is. So we're almost approaching our full hour here, but you know, Rebecca has these 2.5 hour conversations in her Detroit Canvas project scenario. So I'm not feeling bad at all with this. We can go 3 hours to get payback for the 2 hour things we go through. Nevertheless, applying 101 with the state. The first step right now, the city, Homegrown Detroit, has a process kind of like this diagram on how to apply. So step one, and you let me know if you think differently. Step one is to get your social equity with the state of Michigan. Now, does it cost any money to get your social equity status with the state of Michigan?
No.
It's a one-page document?
Yes, it's simple.
Okay, so you go to state of Michigan, you apply for social equity. There's a link there in the show notes if you have this. But if you Google social equity, state of Michigan, it's most likely in the top 3 items. It will take you to that application. It's going to ask, you got to prove that you lived in an area that have been disproportionately affected by the war on drugs, by your same process as kind of like legacy, except for it's not 10, 13, 15 years. I believe it's like 5 years for that. So you got to show a lease or utility bills, all that jazz to qualify for that. Same documents you're going to need for the legacy program, nevertheless. So if you did legacy and you're qualified, same documents you're going to submit to the state. If you're convicted for a crime with that involved marijuana, you're submitting support for that. You can go to, I believe it's iChat. You can do like a background chat, which is like 10 bucks, I believe, to pay for that. And yeah, you can see all your charges from there. And then caregiver, you sign a attestation that you got to get notarized, that you submit that to the state, and the state will pull your records to see when you are a caregiver. So those 3 things are what you submit. There is no fee. You can do this online. And what would you say is a typical turnaround to first apply as a social equity right now?
Oh, yeah, the social equity piece. I mean, I would say 2 weeks right now. I mean, okay. I definitely think when there was definitely like an influx like earlier in the year, you know, a lot of people getting ready for April. But now I think it's kind of slowed down. So, yeah.
So step one, social equity. Step two now is applying for your Detroit Legacy application, which if you go to the website, I haven't looked right now, but it's kind of on hold. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah, you can't even, I mean, you can go to the website and see the steps to get all your information, but you can't
apply.
Look at the application. Yeah.
Okay. But once it does open back up, your second step on how you get started One, get your social equity with the state. Doesn't cost any money. You do not have to hire an attorney. We're actually going to do a show. I'm going to do a show that walks you step by step how to do it. Maybe like a 20-minute show to explain it. You do not need to hire an attorney for that. You can do that on your own. Just got to just get some paperwork. Step two, apply for your Detroit legacy application. I don't think you need an attorney for this as well. It's the same documentation you almost did for social equity, just a little bit further back. Lease is utility. And then that costs $100. So you did one, you did two, and then step three is now the application fee to the city. Now, in order to supply to the city, you got to have three things in place. In order to apply for the city, you got to have a state pre-qualification, you got to have a tax clearance, and your Detroit legacy. For the pre-qualification, would you guys recommend needing an attorney for that?
I think it depends on your individual situation. We didn't really need an attorney until we wanted to do something very specific in how we structured our company. And so you may need an attorney to write up the language for them to be able to say yes to that. But if it's just like a real straightforward situation, I would say no. Maybe do more of an a la carte, maybe not necessarily retain an attorney, but maybe, you know, if there's some specific documentation that they're requesting, then maybe reach out to an attorney for that type of assistance.
Okay. And when you're applying for the state, I believe it's $6,000 to get this pre-qualification minus any reductions, which is why in step one, you apply for social equity. Because that social equity discount now is going to apply when you're on step three, which is getting your pre-qualification in order to apply to the state. So if you got 25%, 50%, 75%, you have to do that before you apply. If you did it after you apply, there is no going back getting, you know, a return from the state. So that's why that's kind of step one. So after you now get your pre-qualification, you mentioned the corporation, you got to have your taxes in order. Do you know how many years they look back for business and personal taxes?
A year.
Okay.
1 year.
Okay.
For adult use.
And especially if it's a new entity, you don't have any business taxes, but personally, you would have a year of taxes you kind of need to show. And then now you got to apply for a tax clearance. Now with the tax clearance with the city, is it personal and business, or is it one or the other, or is it both?
Yeah, it's both.
It's both.
Okay. And is that two different applications, or that's all in one?
It's two separate. It's the corporate and it's an individual. Okay. And they do ask if you have been a resident, worked, or done business in the city of Detroit. I think it's the year 16, 17, 18, and 19. So it's a drop down. So whatever year you did, you know, live, work, or, you know, have a business in Detroit, they just want to see, did you pay your taxes?
Okay. And I'm actually curious, you may not, but if you lived in the city of Detroit or you had property in the city of Detroit, you were back and forth, say it's your secondary home, but yeah, your primary home was outside of the city of Detroit, do they ask for city taxes individually for that?
Yeah, they do ask for the clearance of the property taxes. So if you own any Detroit property, they want to, they're going to check and see if you owe any property taxes to the city of Detroit.
Okay. Unless you leased or rented or something like that, your second spot.
Right.
Okay. Cool.
Yes. If you own any property, commercial or residential, they're going to look at the tax records.
Okay. Yeah. At the end of the day, the city of Detroit wants as much money as they can get. And, you know, you're going to have to prove to them, if you own property and did not pay them taxes, why that is. Okay. So a driver's license, if you, like you said, if you are, you have two homes, you have a home, say in East Point, you got a home in Detroit, right. You have to prove both situations.
Okay. Keep drinking that drink. We got two more hours to go, Rebecca. I was just paying back. And there ain't no bathroom breaks either. Stop playing.
Oh,
no, we only got like two more slides. We good. All right, so step one, you apply for social equity. Step two, you do Detroit Legacy. If you are a general applicant, you don't qualify for Detroit Legacy. You skip that step. Then you move on to step three, which you still, whether you're legacy or not legacy, you need to get pre-qualified with the state. And then in order to do that with the state, you need to have your taxes in order as your entity. There's a link there to go to the state. But if you Google, again, Michigan State Marijuana Licensing Application, it will come up. And that's $6,000 to apply, minus any kind of fee reductions if you got social equity status. Even if you didn't apply for that, now you're still at this step three point right here. And then your tax clearance with the city. And then now, after you finish those three things, legacy or non-legacy, tax clearance with the city, you got to do that no matter what. You're pre-qualified, got to do that no matter what. Now you apply with the city of Detroit, and it's $1,000. When you apply, does depend if you're legacy or not legacy, quote unquote, so far. And when you apply, it's $10 because it's $1,000 application fee. And then you can either get a full license fee if you do have property. It's $5,000 if you're a general applicant. It's $50 if you are full legacy and you have property. But what Rebecca mentioned earlier, you can still go through and get this provisionary certificate. You don't have property. Almost like getting pre-qualified with the state. You're like pre-qualified with the city to have a micro business or a retail. And I believe that's $50 as well, too. And then once you do get property, you can go back and finish the rest of the steps as if you had property from the beginning. Anything I'm not thinking of as far as when you are applying with the city that you may need to include. You got your tax clearance, you got your social equity, you got pre-qualified. When you apply to the city, is it just, hey, my name is Earl, I'm applying, boom, I'm good? Or is there some documentation that you need when you're applying for the city?
Oh, yeah. In addition to all the basic stuff, you know, tax returns, all that kind of stuff, you need to provide an appendix of plans. So your business plan has to include things like your operational plan and how you're going to fund the business. You also need to include other plans like waste management, disposal plans, a security plan, a community benefits plan. You know, there's a whole list of appendix.
There's a lot of moving parts within this process. They have simplified it on the website, but I think just from our perspective and really being in the trenches, you really have to be doing multiple things at the same time. For instance, I know we don't want to emphasize the real estate side of things just yet because you're saying you can go ahead and get that provisional. But I think it's very important for time's sake that you start to identify the real estate or even begin. And this is outside of what the city is allotting for, right? So you're going to have to really pound the pavement to find somewhere where you want your business to be because you have to go through special land use hearing. And that's what you need to do when you submit your application, right? You got to go through that special land use. So that's another thing that they kind of added later that I think a lot of people may not even be familiar with that process. And that process, it took us a year. So,
yeah, I mean, in that process, they review all those plans that I just talked about. And I had to pull up my list. But the scoring sheet for the application, you have to include a good neighbor plan, a business plan, an operations plan, a security plan, a nuisance mitigation plan, a waste handling plan, a community relations plan, an employment recruiting and training plan, a customer and employee safety protocol plan, a Detroit residence employment plan. That is all the plans in addition to the stuff you have to do, like the pre-qual, the tax clearances, et cetera.
And I think that's where you would need to bring an attorney in to really help you with that side of things.
Right.
You shouldn't have to go at that alone. I think if you, you know, have a little bit of funds to invest in this huge opportunity, that you should really focus on that aspect, that list that she just read off.
So you're saying I can't just hit you up and say, hey, oh, can I just copy and paste this information like a test in school? Like, what's the answers to 1, 2, and 3?
No, because it's really specific. It's really specific to your community, you know? And that's why I say you got to identify that real estate. because you're going to have that community to approve you. That's the part that is not really talked about, but you really need to have the community on your side. So,
okay. Good point. All right, ladies, with that said, we got that done. Again, you guys can go to the hub and get the free resources right there. Go to Campus Therapy Network, click on resources. It'll take you to the hub. It's a free hub. All of our content lives there. All of our resources live there. The slide deck is in there. The transcripts is in there. The MP3 file, audio files are in there. Only downside is the audio files is that you will not get to see Rebecca and Latoya's faces because it's just audio. Pay attention, Rebecca. Stop looking down, texting people. What I'm saying. All right, this is it. We're wrapping up. If you guys have any final questions, it's all good. But ladies, could you give us what's up, smoking and cooking? He said, what's up, though? Would you kind of give us a quick rundown with this court case and kind of what it means? If you could do it, say, within 2 minutes or less, kind of what's going on with the court case and kind of what it's doing right now in the city and kind of what we could do about it as well.
What's going on is we have some person that basically is suing the city of Detroit, stating that it's unfair, that she is been in the city, right? But she, I guess, does not qualify for legacy. And so she's hired an attorney and they're suing. So yeah, it is a bad situation for the Legacy Detroiters. We're going to have to wait this one out. But I think while we wait, I think we should do something. And if that's, kind of social media, just really talking about it, getting it out there, getting more attention to this situation, because we really do believe it is a bigger play, and I think it's to really stifle what's happening, what could potentially happen within the city of Detroit, which is building a lot of generational wealth based off of the cannabis industry. Would you want to add something?
No.
What? Yeah. Becca, you better get, I know you got the passion about.
To be honest, we can't do anything right now during the lawsuit. I think, we have to wait to see what the judge says. I mean, we can do our due diligence and find out where the lawsuit is, find out if it's a public hearing, find out if we can submit public comments. We can do things like that as public citizens because public hearings work like that. You can be a public comment, but we have to do our due diligence and find out if that's even a possibility. And then in the meantime, continue to get your shit together. It depends what the judge is going to say, if the ordinance can stay how it is or if it has to change. We just like in this weird waiting scenario.
And it kind of goes full circle, kind of what we're going over, kind of going to the background. The reason why we went to that history of how we got to where we are today, as you can see, we kind of had an opportunity as, we're seeing minorities, but in particular, to be specific, Black-owned cannabis dispensaries, growers, retail stores, safety compliance, all that jazz, for people who were targeted because of this war. And now that it's recognized how fucked up it really was in the beginning, for us not to have an opportunity to be on the ownership end of this and not on the consumer only end of this, that's where this legacy program kind of came in. And Detroit kind of actually put together one of the best programs in the nation that kind of helped reconcile, or at least I don't want to say reconcile, but at least gave us, who's us? People who have been disproportionately affected by the war on drugs, who may not be able to qualify because of certain special interest barriers that were put in place for medical and even adult use, even though they removed some things. But the cities can step up on top of the state social equity program that did not reconcile the situation. I get, it was a little, it was an appetizer, but it wasn't a full course meal. And the city is trying to put together this meal to allow us to eat in this industry. And this meal that's supposed to be provided to us to be able to partake and eat in this industry is being challenged. and who's being challenged by it? Of course, there's a name on paper, but we don't really, is it the same special interest? Is it the same anti-marijuana, or is it the same greediness? Is it the same racist thought and process of people trying to stop this program, because we had an opportunity and we still have an opportunity to really take ownership in a city that is minority owned? And what we can do, a couple people chatted earlier as well, how can we support those minority owned businesses? You know, we can vote by dollars. I believe Dr. Martin Luther King talked about that in the bread basket operation moving back then. If you don't respect my dollar, go holla. I don't think he said it just like that, but I just kind of improvised that because it don't quote me. But yeah, I mean, allow people to respect our dollar, us as a people, as a group, whether you're black or not, or you're a minority. If you're just for people, if you're just for doing the right fucking thing, if you're there for righting a wrong and realizing this, even if you go to church and you don't like marijuana, all right, this is not a religious thing. God created this plant on day 3, all right, book of Genesis. We're going to go there too much. But even you yourself, this has turned out to be one of the greatest lies ever, because even like the people who it's actually targeted to oppress, you are oppressing yourself and other people at the same time, not realizing that you are actually the person that is trying to oppress. And you're fighting against the freedom of being of the liberation of the plant. I'm saying it because, you know, I believe in Christ too, but let's not get to this religion scenario to where this is like, you know, anti-marijuana. You got to, you know, there's a veil over our eyes that needs to kind of fall off. And it's, it all comes off by truth. And the truth is, there's an opportunity right now for those who live in a city and those who are minorities to participate in this industry. And it's being challenged right in front of your faces. And it's being challenged by some of the stores you're going to every single day supporting. It could be coming from people on 8 Mile, could be coming from people from other cities who want an opportunity in here, could be from special interests of people in Alaska who got big money, or Canada and got big money coming in. It's time for people to really put their money where their beliefs are. I think I just went on a little rant right there. I'm sorry. I'm good.
Preach, okay. Preach.
That's what we can do. But nevertheless, we thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you, Toya. Thank you. I got your guys' slide up right now on how to stay in contact with you. You guys are the co-owners of Collexium. There's you guys' email. The website is also collexium.com. That cool name, I'm going to go ahead and spoil it, came because it is the female part of the plant where it all starts. Is that right? I'm sorry. How does it?
Well, yeah, the anatomy of the cannabis plant. There's the calyx. The calyx is where the medicine comes from, where the cannabinoids and the THC is produced. So Collexium is a playoff of calyx, and the cannabis plant is female, the part that we smoke and we enjoy so much. The male just really just kind of provides the seed, right?
I've got to take it. Okay, personal. Okay, this is saying personal. I do more than that. I bring more stuff to the table. No, I'm joking. well, thank you, ladies. This has been awesome. Any final words on your part?
You know what I always say to people who are, you know, a part of this industry and really want to stake their claim is to be relentless and not to give up. Be smart. You know, don't try to do it all by yourself, because you can't. You know. Realize what your strengths are, realize what your weaknesses are, and try to identify people that can assist with your vision, your dream, and your passion.
Yeah, that's what I'm just persistent, because this is a long game. You're not going to open a dispensary next month. I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's what's up. And that kind of answers, we got a question from Brianna. She asks if, Would we suggest still going for Detroit Legacy status if you haven't submitted an app to the state yet?
Yes.
And got pre-qualified. Yes. The answer is yes.
It's going to take time.
Cool. And then even while you can't apply for the Legacy now, I would still try to get your pre-qualification with the state, because still, no matter what, that's needed to actually come back to the city. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. With that said, this is the Cannabis Therapy Podcast Show. You see my voice right there? Kind of got like a radio announcer type thing. This is Cannabis Therapy Podcast Show, here to help you have more comfortable cannabis experiences that you want and avoid the ones that you do not. That's what we do. Tune in every single Wednesday. We got an episode, different series, whether it's about growing, whether it's about education, about the history or the science of cannabis. We get into that every single week. We do two lives every single month. And then some of the other ones are pre-recorded because I need a life. I got other shit to do. Nevertheless, thank you for tuning in. Thank you to our guests. Wonderful, Rebecca.
Thank you for having
Latoya. Thank you. Thank you. Please do not interrupt me while I'm speaking. No, I'm joking. No, with that said, this is all good. Thank you, guys. I see y'all next time. Peace. Thank you.
Peace out.
Thanks for listening to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast. For more cannabis therapy blogs and resources, check our website, CannabisTherapyNetwork.org, CannabisTherapyNetwork.org.